Okay, bear with me while I have a technical moment here. It worked before the service started, that's all I can say. God is good, there we go. Last week, we began a series on the healings of our wayshore Jesus Christ, looking to those healings for principles that we can really use and apply in our own life. And so I just thought we'd do a quick review of some of the things we talked about last week. We explored the idea of what it really means to be spiritual beings having a human experience. And we said that we actually live in two realms. We live in the absolute realm where there's only goodness and perfection. And by the way, and I say and not but because Joe Warren taught me that, and we live in the physical world. And in the physical world, well, first of all, in the absolute world, we have all that which accords with God as divine principle, which is, has been, and ever will be. And that truth abides in us in fullness at our very core. We are free and unlimited. And, by the way, we also live in the physical world. And there, we're in the material world of our senses. And we might have conditions in this physical world that we might have illness, we might have challenges. The point is, though, any condition in the physical realm can be healed through the power of the spiritual realm, from Charles Fillmore. And last week, we looked at the stories of two healings of blind men. And we realized that the men were not only physically blind, but they were spiritually blind, that they were blind to their own innate wholeness. And that's probably the main principle we pulled out of those lessons, that wholeness is our spiritual essence. So today, we're going to look at a couple of more, or one more story with healing. But, you know, if we think about all the many healings of Jesus, the countless ones in the Bible, I know we can all recall time and time again those where Jesus talked about faith, and many times the person's faith. And just one of the many examples is Mark 5:33, where he says, with the woman who had enough faith to touch his cloak. Remember that one? And Jesus says to her, he turns to her and says, "Take heart, daughter, your faith has made you well." And instantly the woman was made well. Now in the stories we looked at last week, the healing was not immediate. It took a while, but this is an example of an instant healing. So today we're going to look at another healing where Jesus mentions faith, but this story is reported in two of the Gospels, Matthew and Luke. In both versions, the healing occurs in the town of Capernaum, which is on the northern shore of Galilee, the Sea of Galilee. Now, this was the headquarters for Jesus' northern ministry. And our story occurs right after the Sermon of the Mount, when Jesus and his disciples are returning to the town of Capernaum. What makes this particular healing unique is Jesus' comments about the person who makes the healing request. He says to the person, "Very truly I tell you, I have not found anyone in Israel with such great faith." Wow. Wow. Someone whom Jesus believes has more faith than anyone in Israel. Who might that be? A rabbi? A disciple? A prophet? A child? Well, let's look at Matthew's version to see. And we find the story in Matthew 8, verses 5 to 13. When he entered Capernaum, a centurion came up to him, approaching him and saying, "Lord, my servant is lying at home paralyzed in terrible distress." In Luke's version, it says, "at the point of death." And he said to him, "I will come and cure him." The centurion answered, "Lord, I am not worthy to have you come under my roof, but only speak the word, and my servant will be healed. For I also am a man under authority, with soldiers under me. And I say to this one, 'Go,' and he goes. And I say to this one, 'Come,' and he comes. And I say to my servant, or to my slave, 'Do this,' and my slave does it." When Jesus heard him, he was amazed and said to those who followed him, or said, actually, I'm going to skip that part. We'll read that later. But says directly to the centurion in a few minutes, go, let it be done for you according to your faith. And that was the moment that the servant was healed. So, when Jesus performs this healing, he performs it at the request of a Gentile. And not just any Gentile, but a centurion. Now, a centurion would have been in the Roman army, an officer in the Roman army. Probably this one was under, with a time period, under the command of Herod Antipas. Now, centurions were typically in charge of a company of about 75 to 100 soldiers. So this soldier is a man of war, stationed in Palestine to subject the Jews to the emperor's rule. And probably he rose to the rank of centurion by distinguishing himself in the brutal martial arts practiced by the Roman army. So an unlikely hero to our story, really. And knowing that the Roman soldiers were certainly not known for being overly fond of the Jewish people, our first question would have to be, why would a Roman centurion approach Jesus in the first place? Well, if he had been stationed in Capernaum for very long, he probably would have heard of some of Jesus' miracles, because it was here that Jesus came after turning the water into wine. It was here that he first called his disciples. It was here in this small seaside town that he had just, right before this story starts, just healed a leper. So maybe the centurion had heard about Jesus and his miracles, and maybe they had fueled a faith in him. Interestingly, in Luke's version, the soldier doesn't approach Jesus directly, but goes through some Jewish elders who appeal to Jesus on his behalf. But at any rate, in both versions, the centurion himself insists that he is not worthy to have Jesus in his house. Now, here is a man of power and authority over others, yet he humbles himself before Jesus, whose greatness he recognizes and in whom he has faith. So certainly one message I think we get from this healing is that it's necessary for us to have both humility, we have to know we can't always do it by ourselves, and also faith in order for spiritual healing to occur. And also something that people of that time would know immediately when they heard this story that we don't quite get today is that the house of a Gentile was considered by early Hebrews to be unclean, and entering such a home would defile a Jew. So the centurion shows deep respect and sensitivity for Jewish law and also for Jesus' religious tradition. But perhaps the most compelling question of all is, why does Jesus say that this man has more faith than anyone in Israel? Well, for one thing, the centurion is an example of what we might call an absent healing. He believes that it's not important for Jesus to be anywhere near the servant in order for the healing to take place. Now, I asked last week at the beginning of the lesson, how many of you had ever called Silent Unity? And a lot of people raised their hands. So if you've called Silent Unity, especially for healing in this case, you actually too have put faith in this absent healing, because the person praying with you over the phone was hundreds of miles away. And still, we don't think that even matters, because we know that the presence and power of God transcends time and space. And perhaps one of the reasons that Jesus admires the faith of this centurion is this is a man who realizes that even though he has this huge army under his command, not one of his soldiers could heal that servant. Not even the entire Roman army, as powerful as it was, could heal the servant. And the centurion turns to a greater power. I'm sure there's a lesson there for all of us. When we first have an illness or a diagnosis, do we turn first to modern medicine, to the expertise of a favored physician, to a prescription, to Dr. Oz? Or do we turn first to the power of the great physician, and then we're guided in terms of what other steps to take? And I know you all are just waiting for me to tell you what the centurion means metaphysically, right? Okay, I'm not going to disappoint you. Metaphysically, according to the Metaphysical Bible Dictionary, the centurion symbolizes will. who and the servant symbolizes the body who is sick. Now that really puts a deeper meaning to the story. The will recognizes it alone doesn't have the power. So it calls on the higher law, the Christ. And notice when the word of truth goes out, the body is healed. Now I believe that this incident has another important message for us. It is found in the words of the centurion when he says, "Just say the word and my servant will be healed." Remember, he says, "I'm a man under authority, but I tell one soldier, go, and he goes, and another, come, and he comes. And I say to my servant, do this, and he does it." We just read all that. This centurion demonstrates the great insight into a metaphysical truth that really was not heard of very much in those days, but we know more about it today, and that is the power of the word. Bible scholar Ed Rabel says that he believes when the soldier says, go, I tell this one to go, that symbolizes our power of denial, what we need to release in our life. And when the soldier says, come, that symbolizes the power of affirmation. Now, if you've been in Unity a while, you're very familiar probably with denials and affirmations. They've been part of New Thought since the beginning of the 20th century, but sometimes they are misunderstood. And I confess, I think I was in Unity for a while before I really understood what they meant. In Lessons in Truth, which some of us studied recently, Emily Cady tells us that denials and affirmations are sets of statements that help us to align our thinking with the truth with a capital T, that spiritual truth, that spiritual realm. And she says, I love this, that they are like two messengers, or two angels, she says. Angels are messengers in the Bible. That denials and affirmations are like two angels that guard the door of our consciousness. They are not magic. I think I used to believe maybe they were magic, and then they seemed a little hocus pocus, you know? They were not magic, and of themselves, they have no power. They are statements that we use to train our own minds, allowing us to remember the truth that there is only one power and one presence, God the good, omnipotent, meaning all powerful. And denials are statements of release. We do not deny facts. We're not in denial. That's not about being in denial. We do not deny facts or feelings, but we deny that those facts, our feelings, our emotions have any power over us. We just deny the limits that they seem to impose on us. We use release statements, denial statements, to remind ourselves that no matter what is going on in the outer realm, there is a greater reality. Now, it's important to remember that every time we do a denial, which creates sort of a vacuum, we have to fill that vacuum with something, and that's when we fill it with an affirmation. Now, we again do not say affirmations just to make things happen. That would be hocus pocus. I could stand here and I could say, okay, I'm a 25-year-old star pitcher for the St. Louis Cardinals. And I could say that again and again and again, and I could put feeling and emotion to it, and you know what? I don't think it's going to happen in this world. So it's a matter of really making our affirmations aligned with what is already spiritually true. And this is what conditions our consciousness and allows our thinking to just get in flow with the spiritual nature of wholeness, and that opens our mind to the healing energy of God. Now, certainly we are subjected in this world, and we all know it, to negativity, pessimism, gloom, and doom, are we not? But the point is, we don't need to feed that gloom and doom to ourselves, and we don't need to give it a permanent home in our consciousness. My thanks to Faye Schmalig. I bet some of you have seen this on our Facebook page. I love this. You never invite a thief into your house, so why would you allow thoughts that steal your joy to make themselves at home in your mind? And why would you allow thoughts that say you're less than whole to allow themselves in your mind? It's just something we don't need. So do you all believe that old adage, sticks and stones may break your bones, but words will never hurt you? Do you believe that? Well, maybe our parents were wrong in one sense. Maybe some words can hurt you. And those words, all of our words have power, but I believe the words that can hurt us the most are the words of our own self-talk. when we give ourselves those negative messages. Those words, I do believe, hurt. Because in the words of Paul, probably my favorite Bible quote, "Finally, beloved, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is pleasing, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence and if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things. Keep on doing the things you have learned and received and heard and seen in me, and the God of peace will be with you." So when we consciously speak positive, powerful words of truth, all the power of the divine realm, all the power of God is released around, within, and through us. And that means peace and harmony, joy, divine order, whatever your earthly need is ours. So this story does teach us an important aspect of healing, I think, that faith is a spiritual law, and that it always works when we align our thoughts and words with the Word of God. What Jesus says at the end of the story, this part I skipped a few minutes ago, we can really learn from. It's really telling. I picked the story up in verse 11. He says, and this is right after he mentions that the centurion has all the faith, and before he announces that the servant is healed. It's in between there. He says, "I tell you, many will come from the east and the west and eat with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven, while the heirs of the kingdom will be thrown into the outer darkness, where they will be weeping and gnashing, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." And then to the centurion, he says, "So let it be done for you according to your faith." So what does that mean about throwing out of the kingdom and all the gnash? That doesn't sound like Jesus, does it? I think what he's saying here is that he is just making the point that this Roman soldier, this enemy of, really, of the Israeli people, has absolute faith that Jesus can heal from a distance, while many of the Jews, that's who he was talking to at that point in time, many of the Jews, Jesus' own people, were unable to believe in even the most obvious demonstrations of Christ's power. So he's talking to those people who are unable to accept Jesus. And those who come from the east and the west, those are the Gentiles who follow Jesus. And he is warning, Jesus is warning his Jewish brothers and sisters that just because they are descended from the Hebrew patriarchs doesn't mean they will enter the kingdom of heaven. And the centurion, here's the lesson for us, who in deep trust and faith believes in the power of the word, actually the centurion receives even more than he asked for. He didn't ask to go into the kingdom of heaven, did he? He asked for the healing of his servant. But so often when we turn to God with a physical need, our physical needs are met, and we also receive the kingdom of heaven. And Jesus says then to the centurion, "Go your way as you believe." And I think that is the main message of this particular healing for all of us. Because in the end, as we navigate this physical world with spiritual understanding and faith, as the centurion did, we know that when we first seek the kingdom, we can turn away from any appearance of lack or illness, any human need. Remember, again, our souls are pivotal. We can turn and dwell on the problem, or we can turn to God. And knowing and exercising the power of the word, what we say to ourselves and what we say to others, we can align our thoughts and words with spiritual truth so that we recognize and call upon our own indwelling Christ. When we say the word, we reconnect with our spiritual wholeness, and we allow that healing power to flow. And as we prepare today for our time of meditation, let's just take a moment to affirm the truth that underlies all physical healing and all of our many blessings from God, that there is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in our lives, God the good omnipotent. Would you repeat that with me? There is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in our lives. God the good omnipotent. And so it is.